I wrote a story about a young man who just wants to find love, and he thinks in the world of math equations. And not unlike me, there's parts of the story where our character thinks about the probabilities of things happening, such as the probability of finding love or the probability of this date going well. And I guess I felt the need to share with the world the way that I go about dating. It's a shade of the spectrum that I don't see often.
Welcome to Adulting on a Spectrum. In this podcast, we want to highlight the real voices of autistic adults, not just inspirational stories, but people like us talking about their day-to-day life. Basically, we want to give a voice to a variety of autistic people. I'm Aileen Lam, an autistic author and photographer, and I co-host this podcast with Andrew Comro. Hey, Andrew.
Hey, Aileen. I'm Andrew Comro, an autistic entrepreneur, co-host of this podcast, and can answer movie trivia better than Aileen, mostly because I've seen more than two movies. Today, our guest is Austin Wolf. He is an autistic screenwriter and is currently making a movie called Wally Jackson that draws inspiration from his own autism experience. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So I don't know if you've listened to our podcast before. We like to start off. Oh, you have. Awesome.
Two episodes. Yeah.
Sweet. More than I have. No, I don't like the sound of my own voice. So we like to ask each guest how they prefer to identify: Asperger's on the spectrum, autistic, no preference. Do you have a preference? And if so, what is it?
No preference at all.
Andrew.
Aileen's favorite answer. Sucking up already.
It's just amazing to me how like most of the guests answer no preference. When you go on social media, you'd think that, you know, if you use like autistic.
Oh my God, is social media not exactly like real life? I know. This is a revelation. Hold on, I need to write this down. This is crazy. He did say he's a little sarcastic, so we can be sarcastic. I wouldn't be sarcastic anyway.
Yeah, I enjoy that. Sometimes our jokes fall flat. Can you tell us a little bit about your diagnosis journey? So you were diagnosed the first time as a child, and then you got a re-diagnosis as an adult. How does a re-diagnosis work? Can you tell us about that?
Absolutely. When I was a child, my parents were very observant. Somehow I was very disruptive in class. Apparently I was at this big jungle gym and I bit some kid on the ear when I was a kid. So my parents thought, okay, something's a little different with R1. So they took me down to the hospital. I got a diagnosis for Asperger's when I was 8. And then my parents put me in social skills classes. I eventually ended up getting into taking some acting classes because my sister was into acting. And so through the social skills class and acting classes, I sort of learned to communicate in the way that other people like being communicated with, or at least with respect to acting classes, pretending to communicate in a certain way. So that sort of helped me mask through middle school and high school, which is, you know, still a little bit of a challenge, but I was at least able to function with the neurotypicals. And then after high school, I needed a little bit of help with college, just because there were certain things that I just wasn't accustomed to. And the college would only help me if I had gotten a re-diagnosis. So I went to a therapist to see if I still was on the spectrum. I'm pretty sure I was, but again, I'm so experienced with masking that when most people meet me, it's a shock to them to learn that I'm on the spectrum. So I ended up speaking with a therapist, and I asked her, I'm like, okay, she ended up saying that, yes, I do in fact am still on the spectrum. I asked her though, and I said, what were the main indicators that I was? And she said specifically, it was the way that I thought. The way that I think, apparently, not everyone thinks the same way I do. And that, to her, was the key indicator. I get the masking a little bit as well, but more so the way that I think about things. So after that, I got the help that I needed through college. And yeah, that's sort of been my journey with the diagnosis.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing. Were you nervous that they may like undiagnose you? You know, it sounds like that you went to a pretty good one, right? But I, you know, who seemed to, you know, understand.
Yeah.
Were you nervous at all?
I'll be honest. Being on the spectrum wasn't quite part of my identity. By the time I was preparing for that second diagnosis when I was 19, just because I was an actor, I had learned to do the things that people call socializing, you know, learning to make friends. And again, not many people would have said that I was on the spectrum. So it didn't matter that much to me. However, I will say after being, I guess, re-diagnosed, it has become more of my identity in the way that I've accepted it more. That's become very important in my relationship. I've been dating my partner for almost 5 years. And within the first 6 months of our relationship, I think I was 21, she noticed that I was a little bit different than the other partners that she had dated. And she ended up doing research into a partner having being on the spectrum. And she noticed that it had began to express itself in ways that were negatively affecting the relationship. So she brought it to my attention, and she was very kind and very sweethearted about it. In fact, she wrote a 5-page report on how me being on the spectrum might be affecting our relationship. And she did it with such care. Anyway, she brought it to my attention, and essentially we talked about it, and she's essentially said like, hey, you do these things and that's awesome. You do X, Y, and Z. I would appreciate it if sometimes maybe you could do A, B, C. And then I in turn will do X, Y, Z for you. And essentially that sort of opened my eyes in the fact that up until that point, I had really gotten along throughout my entire life masking. Again, it's the way that I think and the way that I go about things. That's with me forever, whether I mask or not, especially in an intimate relationship. So with that, I've really sort of accepted my identity a lot more that, oh, this is who I am. It's going to the way that I think about things and go about relationships is the way that I do it. And I just need to be mindful of that and make sure that the other person that I'm communicating with or in a relationship also feels heard and loved and accepted in the way that they love to be heard, loved, and accepted. So that's all.
And do you think that, let's say after that 5-page report, that how you might mask, you know, let's go specifically like at home around her, do you feel like you were masking a lot before and now you don't need to as much, or the other way around, or what does masking look like for you, and how has it changed?
Yeah, that's such a great question. It's funny, I don't feel like I have to mask around the people that I love most. It's probably why I feel so comfortable with them also. The main thing that we sort of talked about was, it wasn't so much the masking part, it was the communication part. So I'm very direct. I like to get to the point. And sometimes that can possibly hurt people's feelings if it's not, if criticism or things that I want are said in a certain way that aren't taking the other person's emotions into account. One thing that really helped me with that is I thought about it and I thought to myself, okay, I'm a screenwriter, right? I'm writing a movie. And there was one point when I had a previous partner in high school tell me that she didn't like the movie. And she said it in a way that was very direct. And it hurt my feelings. And I was like, oh man, I wish she said it a certain way. And even though I like to speak directly, apparently I also realized that I don't like to receive criticism directly either. I would love if criticism is sort of wrapped in compliments. And so once I recognized that in myself, I was able to also, it helped me communicate with other people knowing that, okay, I myself aren't going to like someone telling me that My work is terrible and I'm bad at this. I like construction criticism and I love receiving data in a certain way. So once I realized that, I was able to adjust my communication skills to make sure that whenever I'm talking to someone, they also feel like they're being communicated with respect, if that makes sense. I know that was a long answer.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's great. And it's such good insight because, you know, I'm also like very direct. And most of the time I do like being spoken to like in a direct way, like just so I know like what people expect of me, because it's hard for me when people are like being nice and I'm not sure if they're like being nice, because that's what people do in America. They're nice, but you don't really
I'm
know
not that nice to you, Eileen. Maybe that's why.
And that's why I like it, because, you know, I know like when you are nice, no, actually when you're nice, I feel like, oh my God, did someone die? But yeah, it's confusing, you know, so I like it. But sometimes when it's too direct, you're like, geez, like, does this person hate me? So it really depends, like, from who it's coming from. But like, I totally get what you're saying. Like, it's good, a good insight that, you know, don't talk to people the way you would like to be talked to. You said that your mind is like different in a way, like you think and process things, right? And I know you think sequentially and in equations. Like, what does this look like in your mind?
Yeah, it's hard to describe it because, you know, it's the way that I've been thinking my whole life. So to me, I'm like, oh, this is how humans think. So it's hard to describe the differences. I guess I'll just describe my experience of the world. With respect to, I like to say that I think linearly and sequentially. Again, maybe a lot of people think this way. My therapist didn't, but maybe other people do. I like to think of terms of, okay, this is going to happen, then this is going to happen, then this is going to happen. How that sort of manifests itself, maybe with respect to a relationship, is I don't, most of the time I don't like to go with the flow. My partner, she's like, all right, Austin, let's do this. Let's change plans. And I'm like, no, that wasn't the plan. You know, at 2 p.m. we have to leave because it then takes us 30 minutes to get to the movies and then X, Y, and Z. So that's sort of how I like to go about things. And it really works well for business, also writing, because you have to think about consequences. But with respect to having fun and having a relationship where the other person doesn't think that way, I have to sometimes find myself letting go sometimes of the sequential thinking to, you know, just be more free, be more artistic, artistic. But yeah, that's sort of how I like to think of things, of this happens and this happens and this happens. And that sort of affects everything that I do, from business to fun to everything in between.
So you do screenwriting. I think most of us know what that is, but if you could tell us what it is. And also, what got you into screenwriting?
Yeah. Writing stories for specifically movies. It's not something I'm currently being paid to do. It's a movie we're currently making. I've been writing the script for like 7 years, and now we're finally saved up enough money to do it. So I got into it because I was an actor when I was a kid, and I would go on auditions. And I don't want to be mean to other writers, but sometimes I felt like I could write it better. Especially when you're the one acting, you read the lines and you're like, okay, no human being would ever say this. So how would I say it? And eventually, you know, I will say, I guess I would consider myself a person who is screenwriting, although I would never want it as a profession, because writing is very, very, very hard. And in my opinion, it doesn't really pay the amount of effort that goes into it. So my day job is I'm actually a coder, and that really, really fits well with the way that I think, you know, sequentially. So that's been also very rewarding for me. But with respect to the screenwriting, I wrote a story about a young man who just wants to find love, and he thinks in the world of math equations. And not unlike me, there's parts of the story where our character thinks about the probabilities of things happening, such as the probability of finding love or the probability of this date going well. And I guess I felt the need to share with the world the way that I go about dating. It's it's a shade of the spectrum that I don't see often. But you know, there's like, for example, The Big Bang Theory, right? We have Sheldon Cooper, we have Community, and you know, those are fun characters. But you know, the whole monotone robot voice, it's not, in my opinion, it doesn't show it all parts of the spectrum. And I guess I never really saw a story with my shade of the spectrum being told. So I just sort of wanted to share that with the world.
And so you just mentioned Sheldon from the Big Bang Theory, but do you think there are any TV shows or movies that almost got it right, or like got their artistic representation close to what you would consider to be a good autistic representation?
That's a good question. It's hard for me to answer that directly, just because from my opinion, and again, these are just my views, I think we have a spectrum and there are good and bad representations from different shades of the spectrum. I can say that my personal, or my most recent favorite, is there's a show that came out of Australia on Netflix called Heartbreak High. And one of the characters on it, that she's, I think the actress's name is Chloe Hayden. She's in the show. She appears to be high functioning, and she ends up dating this other girl. And the other girls was surprised that she's on the spectrum. But one thing that I loved about this character is the drama didn't come from her being autistic. There was one point where she had a disagreement with her partner because they were in a very loud and noisy restaurant and she was just getting overwhelmed. And that's something that I could relate to, but it was the small things. Like, for example, the actress would play with her necklace when she was walking or stressed out. And that's something that I do all the time. And I don't really see anyone else doing. Maybe that's just unique to her and me and a few other people. But I just felt like, you know, what she was going through wasn't played for laughs. It wasn't played for comedy. It felt real, and it really felt relatable to me. Not saying that other characters aren't accurate representations, but this one specifically is one of my personal favorites.
I know of that show. I haven't seen that show. So no, that's a good one. Yeah, my two favorites, I always mention that nobody's ever seen them. I was just talking to Eileen about The Bridge, and I was telling her there was a Swedish and American version, and she thought there was a bridge from America to Sweden, and she thought that was weird. So I shouldn't let her live that down. But I like The Bridge. I also, you know, I mean, you know, I think whether like Sheldon is or Community is, like, I'm on the fence, you know, whether that's the case. Like, you could make the argument of, like, you're basically doing an autistic version of the character from Numbers. If you've seen
right,
Numbers,
yeah.
He wrote a book on the mathematical equations of love, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think he is either, just a math genius, right? So sometimes, yeah. I still think, like, my favorite, though, was probably The Outsider, the Stephen King miniseries.
I haven't seen. I've heard great things about The Bridge, too, as far as representation
yeah.
goes.
So, but sometimes too, like, I like the ones where, you know, it's maybe not as, you know, like in The Bridge, at least in the US version, they never say she is. Same with like The
right.
Outsider, but it's like so clear, but it's yeah. also that way from the beginning, not where people are like guessing, like maybe,
right.
or like, I think it was, Eileen, have you seen Bones?
I've heard of
so,
it.
Like, Bones is one where they never say she is,
right?
But
yeah.
the writer says he modeled it after his friend who had autism, and it was
yeah.
just because it was in early 2000s that they were actually scared of that being a part of the show.
Yeah.
So she is, but they never say she is. Like, he modeled it after somebody, not just
yeah.
like where they're like. So I don't know. Anyway, I don't think I had a point there, which, you know.
No, I love it. I definitely want to check out The Bridge, and we should probably check out The Outsider too, because, you know, Stephen
King's.
It's a
short miniseries. I really liked it. I liked it. It was definitely a slightly different representation.
Yeah.
The Swedish version of The Bridge had like 6 seasons.
Oh, wow.
But that was, and then they do say that she is in the US version. She's just different, but they hired, what's his name? Alex from I don't know. But they hire consultants like she clearly was from the beginning, like whether or not they say it versus just like people assuming it's canon or something. So I always appreciate
Yeah.
I like those a bit more than like hypothesizing. So
Yeah, I appreciate that too.
have you started working on the movie at all? You know, is there looks like there's a GoFundMe. Has there been a moment so far that stood out to you? Or how far along are you?
Yeah, we're shooting in March. I'm pumping all my life savings into it, but we did start a little crowdfunding campaign just to help out with post-production because I will run out of money, but we will get the movie made. So, you know, that's fun. We're doing casting right now. I'll be playing the main character, so there will be, I guess, accurate representation there. Yeah, it's going well. It's very stressful, but so far it's been very, very rewarding. So definitely recommend to anyone that wants to do something big to go out and do it because it'll be very rewarding in the end.
I thought you were going to say go make a movie, but in general, go out big.
In general, yeah. I actually don't recommend producing a movie because it's been hell, honestly. But but the end result is that's what's going to be worth it. The actual work itself, I could live without it, but you know, no one else is going to make it, so we're making it ourselves.
So the million-dollar question. What do you think Hollywood can do to be more inclusive of autistic actors?
Yeah, I have so many thoughts about this. Number one, more autistic writers. By far the most important point. Number two, autistic directors. The only reason I point that up is because one of my favorite books is A Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. For the listeners that haven't heard of it, it's about a kid with autism who discovers that his neighbor's dog has been murdered. And no one cares, no one presses charges, so he decides he's going to solve the murder himself. I love that book. I think that the writer nailed it. As far when I was reading the book, I literally felt like, oh, this is how my brain works. Like, okay, I'm reading this. This is great. I saw a play of it. This was just some play. It was like an off-Broadway play of the actual book because they turned it into a play. And I thought that they played up the autistic stereotypes too much. And it really hampered the experience of the play for me. The actor himself was autistic, which is great. I love that they cast an autistic actor. The director was not. And to me, it was painfully obvious. So I think that there needs to be, first and foremost, more autistic creators behind the camera. And I think that will help bleed into better representation on screen for us actors.
Andrew, do you want to comment on the incident of the dog in the night? I butchered it, but
Andrew
always mentions it.
I'm not a play person, so like, you know, just I go because my wife likes some plays, although Josh Groban and Sweeney Todd was fantastic, so I did see that.
Wow.
That was her birthday present. I almost actually a very autistic moment though. There was Josh Groban is not available during these dates. And I almost booked thinking it was Josh Groban is only available during those dates. So I would have booked it for the complete wrong reasons. No wonder there were more tickets on those days.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome. That must have been a great play. Josh Groban as Sweeney Todd.
It actually was like it was really good. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Eileen, cool. Do you know who that is? It's not a movie, so you might know.
No.
Eileen doesn't watch any movies. It's like a trope at this point.
I love it.
Have you seen Keep the Change?
Uh-uh.
It was autistic, I think. Was it directed and acted? It was very much like, I think, something along the lines of like what you're trying to achieve. It was very small, like budget too. Called Keep the Change. You should check it out if you have
it up.
And I think, I don't know if the director was, but thinks me. They were definitely autistic actors, definitely very autism, just inclusive in the entire process in general. So if, assuming you found it, I know Eileen hasn't seen it, so I won't even ask.
Did that come out a few years ago, 2018, 2017?
2018 sounds about right. Yeah. Maybe a little sooner, but no, 2018. Yeah, that sounds.
Oh, wow. Yeah, this looks great.
Not Loose
All right, so
Change, the conspiracy theory 9/11 documentary, also good, but let's not talk about that.
Different, a little different.
Keep the Change, yes.
Yeah. I love it. It's great. All right, it's on the list.
So, Austin, are you on social media at all? And if so, where can people find you? But also, like, I'm curious if you've experienced some of the controversies and debates, for lack of a better word, on social media, and what the discord in the autistic community. You know, there's a lot of disagreement on many things. And I'm curious, like, how do you deal with it? Like, if you've experienced it firsthand, and share where people can find you if you're on social media.
Yeah, thank you. Personally, it's Austin James Wolf on Instagram and TikTok. I actually deleted social media many years ago, so my Facebook's gone. You know, other things are gone, but I kind of had to restart it for the movie. So, Austin James Wolf is my personal, and then Wally Jackson movie is the movie's Instagram and TikTok. With respect to the actual differences in opinion of everything about autism, I haven't personally experienced it, only because I wouldn't call myself someone that creates content just to talk about it. However, I will say I've been reading this book called Unmasking Autism by Devin Price, their PhD. And the whole point of the book is about how we need to help create a world where people with autism don't have to mask as much, if at all. And I love that. I think that's great. One thing that the author talks about in the book is they have their own opinions about labels. They specifically cite autism as a disability. My own personal opinion is I'm sure that there are certain shades of the spectrum where, yes, it is harder for you to exist and function in this world. And in some cases, maybe a disability is a good label to use. I personally don't use the disability label. If anything, I think having autism is a strength because it allows you to see the world in a different way that many people maybe do not. And this is kind of embarrassing to say, but one of my favorite representations of autism on in movies, which I know a lot of people might disagree with me on, I'm going to say it, The Accountant. And the reason is our character, played by Ben Affleck, he is a hitman, and he helps cook the books for the bad guys. But the reason why I like, personally, I'm not saying it's good or bad, I should just say that I really like it. I like it because it frames his quirks with autism as a sort of, he turns it into his advantage. You know, he can't be in crowds, he doesn't like loud noises and flashing lights, but he works on himself to sort of desensitize himself to those things. So he can use the parts of his autism that help him see the world and, you know, gets done what he needs to get done, while also working to limit the disabling parts of it. So I really enjoy stories where autism is sort of seen as parts of it are used as sort of strengths, because I really do believe that the different way that certain people think can be used to help people. It's a strength. I don't want to say it's a superpower, but that's how I view it. So with respect to the differences of opinions, again, I can't speak to the entire autism community. I can only speak about myself and my own experiences. I just personally think the brain that I have offers me strengths and weaknesses, and I love the strengths that it does give me, because I'm able to do certain things that certain people might have a harder time doing, such as focusing for a long time, coding, thinking linearly. It helps with my writing, things like that. So with respect to that, that's really all I can comment on.
And, you know, I think you're right. It totally depends on, you know, on the people, though. You know, for instance, you know, I'm on the spectrum, Andrew is on the spectrum, and like we're on this phone call, Zoom, whatever you want to call it, like we're having a conversation on this podcast, right? But then there is like the artistic people, like my son, for instance, my oldest son, who's almost 11 now, and he's completely nonverbal. But not only that, he doesn't have a way to communicate beyond basic needs with an iPad, and he has a lot of challenging behaviors, like, you know, self-injurious behaviors, and he has something called PICA, where he eats non-edible items, and he's constantly like putting himself in danger. So for him, it's clearly a disability and not a superpower. And to me, the issue on social media is when people, you know, call their autism a superpower without acknowledging that for some people it can be a disability. So I think there is a lot of nuance in everything. And, you know, it's part of autism. It's hard sometimes to see the gray. It's either black or it's white, right? So
why it's a spectrum.
It's a spectrum, yeah. And well, some people say it's not a spectrum, though. And even the author you just mentioned, Devon Price, like right now, is on social media saying that there are we shouldn't use severity levels, that, you know, there's no severe autism. And, you know, when I look at my son, who's just like, you know, the surgeon pulled the screw out of his colon a couple months ago, because that's, you know, he's also intellectually disabled and his autism is very disabling. And I can't say that my son's autism is the same as my autism. It's just not comparable, right? Like you said, like for someone like you, it can be a superpower, but that's not the case for everybody. And I think it's important that, you know, people remember it's a spectrum. If you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism. So.
Right, everyone's different.
So if you listen to the podcast, you know that we end the episodes with quick fire questions. So basically, you just tell me the first answer that comes to your mind.
Okay, let's do it.
Favorite movie?
Donnie Darko.
Favorite TV show?
Cobra Kai.
Favorite line from any movie? Quote.
Am I allowed to swear on this?
Yes.
The first line that came to my mind was one of my other favorite movies, Eternal Sunshine. They sort of killed the Manic Pixie Dream Girl trope before it even like became a thing. Kate Winslet's character, she's telling our hero that even though she's different, don't treat her different, because you'll end up like every other ex that she's ever had. She says, I'm not some concept. I'm just a fucked up girl looking for my own peace of mind. And I relate to that.
Favorite music?
Music. My favorite band is Current Joys. Very good. Check them out.
Never heard of them. Favorite street taco in LA?
Street taco in LA. Street taco. There is, I can't consider them a street taco place just because they're a franchise, but they're called Home State, and they have very good tacos that remind me of the tacos in Austin, Texas. Brisket and everything. So Home State would be very good.
That's where I live. I mean, Austin, Texas.
Austin? Oh, I love Austin, Texas. That's my second favorite place in the whole wide world. So Home State's the good taco place in LA.
And everyone from LA is moving to Austin. And you know what? If there was one place in the US where I would move, would be LA. So I feel
I love it. Let's trade.
Yeah, trade. Well, thank you so much for joining us today on this podcast and sharing your story. And I love that, you know, even though you're clearly like gifted in a lot of things, you know, you're open-minded and kind, and you understand that the spectrum is broad. I mean, it's good to have that perspective, and I appreciate you sharing your movie, and I hope it's works out for you. And if you want to share like anything about the movie right now, you know, I know you have an Indiegogo or GoFundMe for it. Now is a great time.
For sure. Again, thank you guys so much for having me. To our listeners, if you want to check us out, I bought the domain wallyjackson.com. Right now it redirects to our crowdfunding campaign. So if you want to help us make a movie, go there and support us and be part of our film. Or just follow us and see our progress. So.